You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada, because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Today, we finally talk about Canada's role in the systemic oppression, criminalization, and violence against the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and two-spirit communities. And it is my hope that in talking about these injustices, in vowing to never repeat them, and acting to right these wrongs, we can begin to heal. And discrimination against LGBTQ2 communities was quickly codified in criminal offenses like buggery, gross indecency, and body house provisions. Bathhouses were raided, people were entrapped by police. Our laws bolstered and emboldened those who wanted to attack non-conforming sexual desires. Our laws made private and consensual sex between same-sex partners a criminal offense, leading to the unjust arrest, conviction, and imprisonment of Canadians. This criminalization would have lasting impacts for things like employment, volunteering, and travel. Those arrested and charged were purposefully and vindictively shamed. Their names appeared in newspapers in order to humiliate them and their families. Lives were destroyed, and tragically, lives were lost. Over our history, laws, policies enacted by the government led to the legitimization of much more than inequality. They legitimized hatred and violence and brought shame to those targeted. While we may view modern Canada as a forward-thinking, progressive nation, we can't forget our past. The state orchestrated a culture of stigma and fear around LGBTQ2 communities, and in doing so, destroyed people's lives. Mr. Speaker, the number one job of any government is to keep its citizens safe. And on this, we have failed LGBTQ2 communities and individuals time and time again. It is with shame and sorrow and deep regret for the things we have done that I stand here today and say we were wrong, we apologize, I am sorry, we are sorry.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to let them clap for a minute there just to let us all get a sense of how proud of themselves they are in there. It's been a minute since I played our Sunny Ways, pretty boy, handsome, fearless leader Justin Trudeau here on From Embers, and that was his historic apology to the LGBT community across Canada. This week on From Embers, we're talking about cops and queers. And specifically, we're talking about police crackdowns on gay men's cruising grounds in Montreal, and one collective that's launched a campaign to try and raise awareness about ongoing policing of queer bodies in public spaces in 2018, despite our darling Trudeau's apologetic words. First up, though, I'm going to get us started with this really neat little audio project that was brought to my attention by my interviewee this week. These audio pieces were put together by a collective of AIDS activists in Los Angeles in the 1990s, and they consist of different audio found in cruising grounds, some just a regular night in a park, and others including activists reclaiming the space at an occupation. I'm just going to read to you a bit from the liner notes, because I feel like it sort of captures some of the stuff we're going to get into in the interview here about public versus private, legitimate versus illegitimate uses of beautiful public spaces, how we plan and think of those public spaces, beauty itself, on and on. Here goes. Ultra Red conducted a series of test site recordings in anticipation of their public space occupations of Los Angeles's 3,500-acre Griffith Park. During one such research expedition to the park, the audio activists entered the company of 20 men joined together to desublimate the pleasure grounds. The pastoral has always been forged from ambiguity, the smoke-belching engines of modernization in a dialectical tussle with the promise of civilization located in an experience of nature. To draw out from this contradiction, a space of repose has been the pastoral's task. The microphone recorded the proceedings from its vantage point on the forest floor.
I'm just going to
Okay, and again, that was the audio collective Ultra Red with some tracks made up of audio found in Los Angeles cruising grounds in the 1990s. So next up, I'm going to bring you my interview with a member of Cruise Control, a Montreal-based collective that's working to raise awareness about and oppose police crackdowns on gay men's cruising in Montreal parks. Just in case you forgot, you are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, and this is From Embers, your weekly anarchist radio show. How would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Grant. I'm a Montreal-based, or so-called Montreal-based, anarchist activist. And the most recent project I've been working on is policing of gay men in public spaces.
And what is the collective that you're involved in?
Right, so I'm part of a collective whose purpose it is to end homophobic policing practices, more specifically policing of gay men's sexuality in public spaces like parks and public washrooms.
And how did the group form? Why did it start?
Well, it formed after 2 years of research. So I've been doing access to information requests with a bunch of different police bodies in the so-called province of Quebec. And after going through their documents, I realized that they systematically targeted gay cruising grounds, and they did so using undercover cops, and they were laying accusations of sexual assault or of indecency, which they've historically done to gay men, and they were continuing to do this, so the collective sort of formed to raise public awareness about this issue.
And can you give my listeners just a bit of background or history about the relationship between queer folks and the Montreal police?
Right. So historically, there's been a lot of policing, both in public and private spaces. Last year, the SPVM, which is the Service Nipponais de la Ville de Montréal, our city police service, apologized for the raids and the police misconduct and violence towards queer people in bars and bathhouses and clubs. So there was an apology that happened recently, but historically the violence was pretty severe. They would enter into bars and clubs, sometimes armed with ridiculously huge guns, and humiliate and physically harm queers. But there is also a huge history of policing queers in public spaces. Most notably, probably, would be the Mount Royal, so the mountain in the middle of the city. There's a lot of research that's been done on police stings targeting men who have sex with men in those areas. So I can speak to that kind of violence. As for violence towards queer women, that's my sort of niche, so I wouldn't be able to speak to that so much.
And do you have any stories or moments in particular about the policing of gay communities that you think sort of highlight that relationship?
Right. The one that's, I guess, most talked about would be Sex Garage back in the 90s. That sort of was a pretty big turning point, in part because a photographer was able to capture the raid on this sex party that was happening in the Old Port. And once those pictures hit the news, that sort of polarized queers, and queers came out into the streets in thousands, and that was sort of a big turning point for us.
And what about more recently?
More recently, I don't... is your question sort of like towards bars or clubs, or are you talking more about sort of parks, public washrooms?
Well, your collective formed fairly recently, right? Like within the last few years?
Yeah, okay.
So what are some events that sort of led to that desire to start talking about police violence now?
Right. Well, there's been a significant, I would say, resurgence in police stings that target gay cruising grounds. Most notably on the island of Montreal, but sort of scattered all over the province, the so-called province here also. The projects, the three different projects that I have in mind are not necessarily the biggest, but they're the ones that I have the most information about. So there's one project called Projet Narcisse, which was an undercover police sting which happened over the course of the summer in 2013, and it was targeting men who use Parc Maisonneuve, Maisonneuve Park, as a cruising ground. Basically, in terms of policing, it involved cops cruising gay men, pretending to be interested in a consensual sexual relation, and then either fining them under municipal codes or arresting them under the Canadian Criminal Code for indecency or sexual assault if the cruiser had touched the cop's body. That's only sort of like the policing part of it. This project was actually in large part led by park authorities, and they undertook huge sort of projects to dismantle, quote-unquote, the cruising ground in Parc Maisonneuve. So what they did was they bulldozed a bunch of little mountains that sort of provided us with a certain degree of privacy. They created a sort of path that would cross-cut the cruising ground. So basically they were allowing or encouraging the sort of like heteronormative dog-walking population to walk through our cruising ground as like a disincentive for us to cruise or to f*** there, whichever term you prefer. They did a lot of tree trimming, tree cutting, bush cutting, and invested, I think, a few hundred thousand dollars minimum in this project. And the other two projects are called Nirvana, which was a project that happened in Parc La Fontaine. This project was, I think, probably a bit more intense. They installed cameras near the entrance of the washrooms in the park chalet. They did a lot of undercover things in the washrooms where the undercover cop would like pretend once again to cruise a man who was urinating, and then once the cruiser started masturbating or things got sexual, they would arrest them. And the last park, I guess, that I have in mind was Antignol Park, and this involves sort of a lot of the same tactics that I've just described, except for in this case, they actually created a road to go through the forested area of the park, which would allow for police to surveil at night using their cars. And they also used their cavalry unit, which I find sort of laughable.
That's kind of interesting. It sounds like they're using sort of like urban planning tactics, like lighting, opening up spaces, which is like a really common tactic against like poor and homeless folks also in public space like that recently in a lot of cities.
Right.
Do you think people are being like, why do you think governments are targeting queer cruising in this way right now?
Well, based on the information that I get from police, it's always because this is sort of like disturbing people who use the park in quote-unquote legitimate ways. So police apparently receive a lot of different complaints, and one cruiser actually asked to see those complaints off of which their sort of projects are based, but they refused to give them to us. But yeah, just going back a second to your urban planning question, I would say that the bulk of these projects, the bulk of removing sort of gay men from public spaces, happen not necessarily through policing, but rather through modifications of the space, which made the spaces a lot less welcoming to us.
So I think a lot of people believe, or at least still act as if they believe, that like criminalization of gay, lesbian, queer folks is sort of like a thing of the past. And now we live in this like sunny, liberal, contemporary reality. Where do you think that perception comes from when it seems like it differs so much from what's actually happening to people who are still in public space?
Right. I think one of the things that sort of contributed to queer people not necessarily being aware of this anymore is the sort of importance of dating apps that has sort of made cruising grounds, quote unquote, obsolete. I think that sort of contributed to us not really being on our guards and paying attention to the ways that we're treated in public. And perhaps even our tendency to just be okay with what we've been granted, for instance, like bars and clubs, and to not really think about the larger picture about what we still have to gain and what we still haven't been able to pry out of the state's hands.
Urban planning developments like that can also be a huge part of gentrification in various areas. And I know that's like something that's certainly happened also in gay neighborhoods in many cities. Do you think there's a relationship between gentrification and policing in Montreal?
That's sort of difficult to say. It's not something that I've looked into that much, but these parks do tend to be situated in the three parks that I've mentioned tend to be situated in pretty, I would say, like upper middle to higher class neighborhoods. So it's possible, but I wouldn't want to like pronounce myself sort of definitely on the topic. I know that in the Village specifically, gentrification is definitely becoming a big problem, and sort of an increase in, or at least a visible increase in policing, is something that activists have noticed in the Village ever since gentrification started taking over the neighborhood.
Yeah, and I mean, there's also like some gay men obviously nowadays have like a lot more access to capital, to money, than gay men historically have had. There are rich gay communities now in a way that there wasn't previously. Do you think there's a relationship? Like, do you think that like wealthy gays are playing a role in what's happening?
I think wealthy gays probably pay, I guess to answer this question, I'm just thinking about someone, a cruiser that I spoke to. They're part of an old age group, so a bunch of gay men who are retired, and they meet up every once in a while, and he spoke to them about the fact that he was ticketed, and none of them really thought that what he had done was right, so they were fine with the fact that he was ticketed, and they even suggested that gay men should just keep their, like, sort of sex at home. So I'm not sure of the wealth factor sort of influencing what they're talking about, but I definitely do hear a certain, like, liberal background talking when they say that kind of stuff, and the sort of dichotomy between private and public being very strict, and then sort of following the heteronormative, I guess we could even say middle class, way of thinking about that difference.
So I was sort of drawn to interview your group because of an event that I noticed you putting on a few weeks ago, where you were burning some apologies. Can you tell me about that a bit?
Right. So late last year, actually, the Service de Police de la Ville de Montréal, the SPVM, and Trudeau both issued apologies to the LGBTQ plus communities for what they called either gross injustice or cruel and unusual treatment towards these populations between the years of 1960 and 1990. And the event that we held was an apology burning, so we read both of those apologies aloud, and afterwards we burned them, and our sort of motivation behind that was to highlight the fact that policing of queer communities, and in particular illegitimate policing of queer communities, is still a thing of the present, and that these apologies serve only to sort of obscure the fact that we are still on the daily targets of police violence, intimidation, harassment, and that we sort of wanted to get people to think about what those apologies really mean, what those apologies were really issued for, and to sort of start a conversation on how we can move forward and end policing of queer communities, policing in general, but obviously policing of queer communities.
There were obviously also gay people, lesbian people celebrating those apologies. Where do you think that divide comes from?
Gosh, yeah, I find it really frustrating that we celebrate those apologies. I think the divide is probably a class divide, so people who were celebrating it, or, you know what, maybe to be a little less pessimistic, I think there could have been two things. First, the fact that people who were, who sort of lost their jobs in the queer purges that were undertaken by the state, I can understand why they would be happy to, at long last, have state recognition of the harms that they suffered, so I don't want to diminish that. And the second thing, I think, is definitely a sort of class situation where people who are middle-class bourgeois are happy to hear this because they believe in the state, they think the state is legitimate, so they're happy when the state sort of does something quote-unquote nice, whereas the rest of us realize that the state has its own interest, the state only acts in its own interest, and for that reason, whenever it issues an apology, we're sort of critical of it and wary of it, and I sort of think that maybe the difference in reactions has to do with where we come from, and also the fact that middle-class men who respect the private slash public dichotomy are probably, I would say, no longer, if they're white, that is subject to police harassment, whereas those of us who do not respect the sort of liberal, middle-class, bourgeois idea of private-public, we still end up being targeted. So perhaps that's the biggest difference.
Do you think there are gay communities around you in Montreal or queer communities around you in Montreal that are like communities of resistance that want to push back against police violence?
That's a good question. I've found it, actually the collective rather, I think has found it sort of difficult to find these people. Specifically, like if you reach out to these men on sort of like sites, and you talk to them about the project, there's been a lot of negative feedback. I mean, I think we've tried it two or three times, and we received, like, quasi-hate mail in response. I think at this point, we just haven't, like, reached out to the right people, but there's definitely a movement that's being built here, and we're sort of hoping within the next 2 to 3 years to have this mediatized and not to get an apology, but rather just to get sort of to have people be conscious of what's happening.
Do you think that there's something specific about police brutality against gay men as opposed to like police in general in all kinds of criminalized communities? Like, are you interested in working with other criminalized communities in Montreal to fight this fight, or is it more of a like a community battle?
No, we've reached out, I think, at the beginning of this year to Stella, which is a Montreal-based sex workers organization, and they've probably been our biggest allies in this fight, much more than middle-class cis gay men. They've offered, like, emotional and sort of just their presence has sort of been really helpful because they go through a lot of the same things. Sex workers go through a lot of the same things that men who have sex with men do, especially if they're fucking in parts. And so the collective is definitely interested in collaborating with sex workers, especially because though my research is based entirely on men who have sex with men, so not sex workers, based on what I've seen, sex workers sort of are exposed to a lot more violence than we are while cruising, a lot more regular, a lot more physical violence, which is something that we're not necessarily exposed to. So I do think that in order to win this battle and to win this battle properly, we do have to include other marginalized populations.
Why is it important to preserve access to public space for sex?
So as things stand, we sort of have a village in so-called Montreal, and it's nice because we can feel comfortable there. We, for the most part, don't need to fear violence or intimidation. But at the same time, it's sort of like a ghetto where we're only allowed to be ourselves within a certain sort of restricted physical space. Cruising grounds were, prior to police and park authority interventions, spaces where queer sexualities were visible to the public. They were spaces that queer people had appropriated for themselves and put to our own uses. And with the disappearance of these spaces, we're finding ourselves being pushed back into the village. And I'm trying to remember, I can't remember what the exact quote is of a City of Montreal worker, but she was suggesting that men should go to the saunas because it's cheaper than getting a ticket in the park. So basically she wanted to see queer sexualities pushed back into a very sort of restricted area rather than being present a bit everywhere in the city. So I think that even if people are not interested in cruising or aren't cruising, the fight for cruising grounds should still be of importance to them, because these are spaces where we sort of push the boundaries of heteronormative society, and they're like starting points for I guess, like, this sounds bad, but like queer expansion or queer acceptance, rather.
Yeah. I think that, like, historically, narratives around cruising have sort of relied on, like, a kind of a victim narrative where it's like, well, there is no access to indoor space for people to meet each other. And historically, I think that has been true. Like, historically, I think there have been lots of moments where, like, there, like, the village itself was very policed, the saunas were policed. But I think, like, what you're saying is something quite different from that, which is, like, actually, like, sexuality in the public sphere is important. Do you think that that is a position that, like, still holds a lot of weight or resonance in, like, the mainstream gay community, that we should, like, put our sexualities in public?
I think actually it's the opposite that sort of holds, unfortunately, that we should just stick to our own spaces or the spaces that have been allotted to us and be content with that. So I think that sort of pushing forth this kind of thinking is going to be difficult. But I definitely think that it's worth it.
What is your group proposing or envisioning in terms of, like, a response to police violence and policing of public space? What are some of the projects that you imagine doing, the tactics that you imagine using?
Well, we haven't really come up with, like, a list of demands or anything yet. The group is pretty informal. But I think that something that we've talked about, which would be cool and which exists elsewhere, like in Amsterdam, is that police sort of erect these, like, toleration zones where it's publicly known that it's a cruising ground, but police will not enter those cruising grounds ever. And sort of semi-public sexualities, so sort of sexualities that take place, like, in washrooms or sort of hidden by shrubbery, are tolerated. I think that that's sort of problematic also, because you still have policing in the background, and it's sort of their judgment call. But I think that that would be a very cool first step and would at least end immediate intimidation of men who have sex with men.
How would you imagine that we might get from here to there?
Definitely, I think we have to take advantage of mass media, because they've controlled a lot of the narrative about indecency in this so-called province of Quebec, and usually they put negative sort of demonizing spins on it. So I think that in order to change public opinion, we need to gain access to these platforms, which is proving to be very difficult. Either journalists don't respond to us. Actually, for the most in all the cases, journalists have not responded to it. But I think that that's something that has to happen because mass media plays a huge role in shaping public opinion and also in sort of coercing governments and police to act in certain ways.
And what about the relationship between, like, cops and the gay community in general? Like, there's cops all over the village, there's cops in Pride, there's cops at Pride, there's, like, people dressing up as cops because it's sexy. Like, do you think it's possible to sort of undermine, like, what I think has become a fairly positive view of police and their association with gay communities despite ongoing violence in parks?
Right. I definitely think that that's a huge undertaking, in part because police have been doing a good job at sort of showing themselves to be the allies of this, you know, upper class gay men in the village, and those sort of people sort of command a lot of power by virtue of their wealth. I think that that sort of would be something difficult. Something that interests me, I guess, in your question was the idea of sort of like cop fetish and police fetish, which has sort of always bothered me, but there's actually disagreement within our own group as to whether that kind of fetish is actually like legitimate or not. I think it's definitely a debate that we need to have, and one that we're not having right now. But yeah, just to say that I think that within even the collective, sort of fetishes are debated around that.
Do you think there should be cops in the gay village?
Definitely not. I mean, you can walk by the corner of Beaudry and St. Catherine, which is what the village's main metro station, and there's always either just a lineup of cops, either in their cars or on their bikes, and they are just waiting to target the next drug user, the next sex worker, the next undesirable person, and you can almost never walk by there without them arresting, ticketing someone. The other day I was walking there and they had ticketed, they had given a parking ticket to a van that's sort of like a home for homeless people. So yeah, they have absolutely no place in the village. And the fact that bourgeois society stays blind to this is disgusting.
I know you guys have been putting out sort of calls for experience sharing, trying to gather people's stories about policing of cruising grounds in particular. Have you been getting any kind of response to those calls?
Right. We were able to get four different responses, all of which were very different. So I guess briefly, the most interesting one was interesting, quote unquote, was a man who was cruising in the third floor washrooms of Montreal's Eaton Centre. There was a plainclothes security guard this time. It wasn't a cop, so there was a plainclothes security guard, and he was sort of looking at the man for a period of about 3 to 6 minutes. Once the man started masturbating at the urinals, the undercover security guard went to call backup. As the man exits the washrooms, he's jumped by seven security guards. He's put under arrest. After that, cops arrive on the scene. He's banned from the shopping center for 1 year, which is something that's pretty common, banning these men from their cruising grounds. It's something I'd like to talk about after. So he's banned for a year. After that, he's told that he has to show up to be fingerprinted, and he's fingerprinted, and he has to, he's registered on the sex offenders list now. So that was an example, I guess, of not only the state, but private security forces doing the dirty work of the state, which we all found absolutely disgusting because those washrooms have been cruising grounds since the mall opened, and even before the mall opened, the mall before it was known to be a cruising ground. So there's just no more excuses for what they're doing. And interestingly enough, the sort of interaction was captured by camera. There's a camera facing the back of the urinals, which they installed specifically for those purposes. And we know all of this because the man was kind enough and trusting enough to show us his all the documentation, the relevant documentation that he received from cops for that infraction. There was another case in Longueuil, which is on the south shore of Montreal. In this case requires a bit of background context. So back in 2015, there was a pretty popular media figure who was caught in one of these things. After that, police in that city decided to sort of increase policing and increase police presence in cruising grounds. And what they did is they pressured Longueuil City Council to pass this law, which makes it illegal to find yourself off of marked paths without a legitimate excuse. So the man who approached us, he arrives at the park. There's an undercover cop. Obviously, he doesn't know this. The undercover cop sort of lures him off the beaten trail by staring at him using the gaze, which is a well-documented sort of cruising practice. So he lures him in using the gaze off the beaten path. They have an exchange of a few words about, like, the area and how it's not like it used to be. The man re-enters his vehicle, and a female police officer, so the accomplice of the undercover cop, comes and tells him that he's committed an infraction, that he walked off the beaten path. Now, what's so perverse about this is that rather than using sort of criminal code accusations like indecency or municipal code accusations like indecency, in this case, they've sort of been able to, they would have been able to if we hadn't done any research, but sort of make the public think that, oh, this has absolutely nothing to do with cruising. This has everything to do with, you know, protecting the environment, which is what the municipal councillor told me when I called him and spoke to him personally. But in fact, the background to this law is to make it easier to crack down on gay men by cutting them off from their cruising grounds before any action can even happen. And this man went to court. He lost in court, and he ended up with a ticket of $277 that he had to pay. And on the ticket that this man received, it says undercover operation on Île Charron, which is the park he was in. So undercover operation on Île Charron, a known meeting ground for men who have sex with men. So it was a pretty explicit mentioning of his sexuality, and when we took this to the Commissaire à la Déontologie Policière, so Police Ethics Commission, they said that there was absolutely no grounds on which we could claim that there had been profiling, and in their response they even put profiling in quotation marks, which is pretty angering to receive such a diminishing response, but I guess we shouldn't have expected anything else. So there was another man, who was ticketed in Longueuil again, this time in a different park. He parked his car in the parking lot, which is also a known cruising ground. This undercover cop sort of circulated a smiling at him for like 20 to 30 minutes. The undercover cop finally approaches his car, and when the man touches his inner thigh, he accuses him of having committed an act of gross indecency. Now, gross indecency has been off the books since 1988, And yet Longueuil police systematically use this term when referring to the infractions, but the infraction is actually just indecent act. This man had a bit more luck in déontologie policière, so in police ethics. He was able to get a session, a mediation session, where they got to talk to each other. But visibly, this did absolutely nothing, because years later, Longueuil cops are still doing the same thing.
And you talked a little bit about fines. What are some of the consequences for these men if they are caught in a sting operation?
Right. Fines are not such a big deal. Usually, you can just pay them. Well, actually, in all cases, you can just pay them like a parking ticket, and they go away. Recently, though, police have been sort of trying to scare and intimidate men more, so they're using criminal code provisions, 173.1, which is indecent act, and I forget the code for the number for sexual assault, but they use that provision also. And in those cases, you're registered as, you're fingerprinted, then you're registered as a sex offender, and that follows you around for, I think, I'm not sure how long it follows you around for, but a long time, which is quite serious for people who want to travel, or for people who have jobs which require them to travel. In the case of the person who was arrested in Eaton Center, they will lose their job if they're found guilty in the end. So huge financial consequences, but also sort of emotional consequences.
Like, what about, like, on a broader community level, like, what does it mean to lose access to cruising grounds?
Right. Well, it sort of means that we're ghettoized, sort of stuck in certain places and fearful to go elsewhere, which is something, obviously, that we as queers should loathe to even think about.
If people have stories that they want to share, or if they want to, like, get involved at all, is there anything that you're looking for in terms of, like, engagement from the public, from anarchists, from other queers, at all?
Right. So I guess from other activists, if there are parks in your area that you suspect are gay cruising grounds, and if you see any signs up in the park against indecency or police surveillance, it's really easy to do an access to information request with park authorities or police, and that can sometimes reveal the existence of a project that's targeting a cruising ground. So that would always be cool if you could send that in to us at cruisecontrol@riseup.net. And also, if you've been the victim of this kind of policing anywhere, it could be in the States, it could be elsewhere, we really don't care. We're happy to take anyone's stories. You can also send them to cruisecontrol@riseup.net. And apart from that, we have a Facebook page, for better or for worse, @cruisecontrolMTL. You can follow us there. We post a bunch of either recent court decisions, recent police ethics decisions, and you can keep up with sort of the project that way.
Was there anything that you wanted to talk about today that I did not ask you about?
I guess no. I guess I sort of touched upon the idea that courts and police will often prevent, after the quote-unquote infraction has been committed, prevent these men from revisiting those spaces, the spaces where they were caught in or where they typically cruise, which has the effect of sort of isolating these men from their support networks, isolating these men from their cruising networks, and it makes them much more easy to subordinate legally once they're sort of extracted from those spaces and individualized and can't reach out for help anymore.
Yeah, that's totally, like, another consequence that maybe isn't part of the official punishment, but definitely would also have, like, a personal impact on individuals who get caught up in that. Well, thanks so much for talking to me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The RiseUp account, you can do that. If that's not working, just text me and I can give you my personal Gmail for that.
Okay, perfect.
Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, talk to you soon. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
We'll be right back.
Okay, that's this week's From Embers. Thanks a lot for listening. And as always, if you want to get in touch, you can reach us at fromembers@riseup.net. You've been listening to From Embers either on CFRC 101.9 FM here in Kingston, Ontario, Canada, or you are listening to the podcast edition found at fromembers.libsyn.com or by searching in any major podcatching app on your phone. I hope you'll tune back in and listen to us again in the future. Thanks a lot.
Radical Underground is a podcast that connects underground music with radical politics from around the world. So if you like anarchy and good music about kicking fascists in the face, check us out on Channel Zero, SoundCloud, iTunes, and anywhere else you can find us.
Sick of your right-wing bullshit, it's a fucking disgrace. So let the vegan persuading, kicking you in the face.
You're listening to Dissident Island Radio.
Live every first and third Friday of the month at 9 PM GMT.
Check out www.dissidentisland.org for downloads and more.